the box waiting for the cross, and it was Daniel! Into the penalty area towards Zidane!
All right, so welcome along to episode 2 of European Football Friday on Off The Ball. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Off The Ball. We're also on Facebook and also on YouTube. So we'll be running through a lot of the Champions League results and Europa League results from the week. And I'm joined by an able cast, Phil Egan, Kieran Bradley and Stephen Doyle.
Hey, Raph.
Welcome along.
Me and Phil put on new, nice shirts especially.
Yeah. You did, and then I'm not sure where Kieran Bradley has got himself dressed.
Get an email.
The battery spilled something on his shirt.
Now, we've got plenty of games to look back on from this week, including Liverpool's game against Bayern Munich, Barcelona versus Lyon, Atletico Madrid versus Juventus, and also Manchester City almost getting shocked at Schalke. So we'll just get those results up on the screen now. And I don't know which ones of these jumped out to you of the four. Obviously Liverpool, Bayern, and actually the whole Tuesday was quite dull, but Wednesday was probably the one that for me was possibly the best of the pick.
Yeah, the Atletico win over Juventus kind of stands out because Ronaldo signing for Juventus, you know, he was quite quick to tell reporters in the mix zone after the game he's won 5 Champions League winners' medals, and when he signed we thought, right, this is going to be the final piece of the jigsaw. But I think the fact that Juventus lost to Manchester United in the group stage, Mourinho United as well, you had concerns about them. And Bonucci hasn't been the same player since he's gone back that year at AC Milan. And every time I watch him, he seems to be a bit of a disaster. It's hard to see them turning it around. But if there was one player that could turn that tie around, it would be Ronaldo.
Yeah, Ronaldo, obviously he was at the centre of all the creativity for Juventus in that game as well, particularly the free kick at the very beginning, and then the chance at the end, the free kick which he pulls back for Bernardeschi. As you said, Phil, though, I can't really see it. The away goal or the lack of it is probably the most crucial aspect.
The one thing that struck me watching that game is that Atletico Madrid look like a team where they know the final is in their own house, and they want to get there so, so badly. They've been there before, and they just know that they're going to have such an advantage if they get to the final by playing on their own home patch. And I know they've only moved into the stadium, but wow, what an atmosphere. It was just incredible. It was something that you really picked up on throughout the game. And I think that fed into the players then, because, look, we all know that Simeone breeds dog fighters. You know, they are fighters, and that's the great thing about this Atletico team. And they outfought Juventus. I've never seen Bonucci and Chiellini being dominated in their own box for set pieces in the way they were by Atleti the other night. Jimenez and Godin, the two centre-halves, getting the goals. That says so much. You know, Diego Costa, you know, he could afford to take him off even before the match ended. And bringing on Morata. Morata just looks like, you know, he's one of these players. He's not going to play outside of Spain or Italy and perform well. You know, he needs to be in, and that's such a cliche, playing in a warm country, but he likes his home comforts. He's back in Madrid, and he looked like a player who's reinvigorated by leaving Chelsea and going back to Spain. And I just thought, you know, Atletico dominated that match really from start to finish, and I think they've got enough fight in them and enough defensive nous as well, because they really are such a good defensively well set up team. I think they can go to Turin and just see this tie out and make sure they're into the quarterfinals.
Diego Simeone got caught up in some of the atmosphere as well. I'm not sure if you saw the pictures at the end. I'm not sure what type of message he was trying to send to the Atletico fans, but certainly he's in passionate mood.
Yeah, he was displaying his cojones. So afterwards, I think he was saying that he wanted the fans to display their cojones. So I was like, I'm not sure the stewards would be too happy about that. But yeah, Atleti were really impressive the other night. And actually, I'd go even perhaps one further with Steve-O there, that I'd have him down as one of the favourites for the tournament, possibly the favourite in a year where it's kind of like there's no clear favourite. And in a tournament like this, where you have the graft and the kind of tenacity that Atletico have, particularly emanating from Simeone, I would have them down as real dark horses.
Now, a final one from this game. Now, VAR, it was quite prominent in this game, particularly the Costa penalty that was then ruled out because it wasn't in the box. Another couple of moments later on as well. In terms of the speed it takes for the referee to make the decision, is it still too slow?
Like, too slow is what happened in the Schalke and Manchester City game. You know, we saw the benefit in the Atletico and Juventus one. The problem is, though, like, I thought it worked well at the World Cup, but the problem is referees have a comfort blanket now where they're going to just decide to opt out of making these tough decisions. I don't know what you thought about the Morata disallowed goal. Did Chiellini, did he play up to the camera a bit?
I'm not going to get there. And the interesting one about that as well, Phil, is that if you watch the Jimenez goal, Bonucci goes down. And Brian Kerr, I think, alluded to it in the Virgin Media coverage after the game, that he said, and I totally agree with him, I think you're going to see a lot more players now, defenders, trying to, you know, they'll feel as Bonucci, he just felt a slight hand on his back and he went down straight away. And he's thinking, well, if the VAR lads see this again, they're going to see, well, I was fouled in the box and they're going to disallow the goal. I think you're going to see a lot more players trying to cynically use VAR, because when it was used for the Costa penalty, the referee straight away gave the penalty, but almost seconds later, they had it ruled out, and it was used really effectively there, I think.
And I've no problem. If the referee genuinely got it wrong, I've no problem with that. That's what VAR is for, to correct them. But if referees are deciding, do you know what, I'm not going to make a decision here, I'm just going to wave play on, because that's the easiest thing to do, and then VAR will correct me if they have to. Yeah.
And it still comes down to interpretation as well, a lot of these moments, particularly the Bonucci one, I thought, because, again, is it enough of a push? Sometimes, you know, contact is allowed in football, but to what degree?
Yeah, like, he's meant to be one of the toughest centre-halves in the world. You know, and he goes down under a touch like that. It's ridiculous.
Also, I think it would be...
Well, the problem is with VAR, everything is going to look worse in slow motion. Mm-hmm. Like, contact, handballs, everything. So if you see Bonucci going down in slow motion, you'll see a hand go on him, and then obviously he falls, and it just looks so much more dramatic.
Yeah.
And that is an issue I have with VAR, that a referee sees things in real time.
Yeah.
So that's how different it is when you watch it in slow motion. But what can you do? Can you use VAR and say, right, we can only watch them in real time, we can only watch them back in real time? That's not really what the technology is for.
Yeah. No, I mean, that would certainly tally with Phil's point there, but it kind of boils down to, like, the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. Like, you see that push, technically it's a foul. In real time, it's very, very minuscule, and it's not really what it was there to rule out.
No.
By the way, can we just make a mention? I know I mentioned the two centre-halves scoring. Brilliant finishes by both, you know. Like, it was
particularly the second one.
Godin.
Certainly didn't put his body in the way, did he?
Well, it's great to see him as well run out to the crowd. You know, I know I don't think he got booked, did he, after that? But it's great to see
the crowd.
Great to see a player going out and celebrate with the fans as well, isn't it?
Class.
Yeah. Now, VAR also was an aspect of the Manchester City Schalke game. Now, looking at that result, you could argue it's either resilience from Man City or there's a vulnerability here that's been opened up by what is a poor Schalke team. I'm not sure where you all stand on that.
I didn't expect City to have so many problems, but okay, the result says they've won 3-2. That's, you know, they're going to win the tie, even without Fernandinho in the second leg. But it's just a little trend that happens in City games. They score first and you think they're going to stroll this. Mm. And then they let teams back in. Now, VAR obviously was used against them for both penalty decisions. But it just, they score and it's almost like it seems too easy. Mm. The intensity goes out of them.
Mm.
And I suppose you could say the fact that when Otamendi got sent off, you thought they're really up against it. They pulled it out of the bag. But Guardiola definitely, I don't know what he was trying to achieve with his comments after saying it's shown we're not ready to go and win this, but I actually think he has a fair point there.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of kidology on Pep's behalf there, because I think there's been a lot more chat this week around, you know, potential quadruple and this kind of thing. Zinchenko piping up and De Bruyne was answering questions on it too. But in a way, I think this was possibly the best way that City could have won a tie like this. It shows a touch more resilience than they've showed before. And particularly with the penalty, to come back feeling it, you know, winning a game where you felt aggrieved, I think is actually a good thing for them as a squad.
Yeah.
As well, while Schalke might be fifth from bottom in the Bundesliga, they haven't conceded a massive amount of goals in their domestic league. So, you know, they're not exactly an easy team to break down. And to score three against them away from home, still pretty impressive. I know, obviously, conceding two is not great, but again, you have to factor in the Otamendi playing in defence as well.
Mm.
And also, I thought the Schalke, I can't remember who the Schalke defender was as well, he got muscled off the ball very easy by Sterling, didn't he, as well, for the winning goal?
Yeah, they were looking for a free there as well. And yeah, that's what VAR is going to do, where any contacts. Yeah, it's actually a good finish from Sterling, who, despite all the goals that he has scored this season, he's got 15 goals in all competitions. He's still not a very good finisher. Yeah. He seems to be better, though. That was instinctive.
Yeah.
Whereas if he's running through, say if he was running through clear from the halfway line, you wouldn't back him.
Like the Diego Costa one the other night.
Yeah.
When it was,
you'd be thinking Sterling, what he'll end up doing is he'll probably pass it back to the keeper.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't tend to blast them in.
Mm. Yeah.
But the other night it was quite an instinctive finish. I thought the goalkeeper, his position was a little bit off, where he was covering way too much of his near post. Mm. And he just left the goal open for Sterling.
Yeah, we'll get to Liverpool and squad depth when we get to their game against Bayern Munich. But I wonder, are City quite as, do they have as much depth as we kind of think, particularly defensively, when we're seeing the likes of Fernandinho then being fielded in defence, Laporte being pushed out to left back? Or, you know, is it just a question of some of these injuries are obviously going to be short term? Mendy's meant to be coming back, and, you know, Stones isn't supposed to be out for long. That's not actually that bad.
Mm. Well, it's all down to his shortcomings at left back, isn't it? With Mendy being out injured so
often.
Because
Zinchenko gets game time.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, you know, his strongest back four is Kyle Walker, Laporte, Stones, and Mendy.
Yeah. But even Mendy, you get the feeling he doesn't really trust him.
Yeah.
And you don't know if Mendy, like, he seems like a really, you know, chirpy character, but it's kind of almost, you wonder, does he just rub Guardiola up the wrong way a bit as well?
Yeah,
you'd also be targeting Mendy with every game if you're an opposition manager. You'd just be like, he's going to bomb forward as soon as you get the ball, just attack the attack.
I actually remember the game at Anfield, the nil-all draw. It's probably the most disciplined performance I've seen from Mendy, where he was obviously told, you know, we like you going forward, but don't leave space. And he was actually very good that day, but he doesn't play enough. We haven't even mentioned the goal of the game.
Oh, it's a beauty.
Leroy Sané, it was unbelievable.
It wasn't bad.
Yeah, he got caught between two bus stops with that celebration though, as well. He started doing it and then he sort of pulled himself back.
Remembered where he came from.
Yeah. Just on celebrating against former clubs, you would be very much in favour of that, or do you think maybe if you were in those shoes, maybe sometimes you'd kind of go, yeah, okay, fair enough, I have a relationship there, maybe I'll tone it down.
Depends, like if you were turfed out.
Yeah.
Which he wasn't.
No. He was nourished and brought up through the system. So you kind of think, I remember you guys, you served me well.
Yeah.
So it's like, then again, I never really scored many goals, so I don't know.
It's the loan ones that used to drive me up the wall, where someone would be on loan for a season and go back and sort of do all this.
Where's Houlihan one, where he didn't celebrate against a team that were prospective buyers?
Yeah.
He was like, it was Norwich and Villa.
Yeah.
Of Villa. So the link was, Wes will go to Villa. And he scored against them. I was like, I'm not celebrating. I don't want to ruin that one.
Now, Liverpool-Bayern the day before on Tuesday, I think the inference is it was a boring game in that, you know, okay, it's a nil-nil, but sometimes
intriguing.
Nil-nils can be...
Intriguing.
Yeah, intriguing might be the word for it. A good result, though, I think, for Liverpool, or do you disagree with that?
I think they would have taken a boring game. I think they would have taken it before, particularly with Van Dijk out. There's been obviously a sense over the last few years that Liverpool and European nights has been very kind of, you know, air hockey-esque from one end to the other. But I think overall it was a good grafted game. Like, they obviously didn't have the finishing, but, you know, I'm sure Phil can elaborate a little on that.
Yeah, like when you look at Matip and Fabinho starting in central defence, obviously Jurgen Klopp, he's wary of that. He's thinking we can't commit too many men forward. Bayern had a lot of possession. Liverpool had chances. Mane is one of those players that, you know, he's such a threat, but he has nights where he just looks like he's got his boots on the wrong feet. And then you think, is there something wrong with his confidence? But he dusts himself down. And then the next game, which incidentally is obviously Manchester United, he can click and then he can score an absolute screamer. But it said it all when it was nil all. There was no sign of Shaqiri coming on.
No.
Like, Klopp was obviously thinking, we do not concede an away goal. So they have Van Dijk back for the second leg. That was always going to be the tougher leg anyway. So you have Van Dijk there. I think Jordan Henderson deserves a mention. He gets a lot of criticism from Liverpool fans because I think they look at what he can't do rather than what he can do. He wears the captain's armband. So, I mean, there's this general feeling that because he's the captain and Steven Gerrard used to be a captain in midfield, that Jordan Henderson should be pinging 60-yard Hollywood balls, but that's not what he does, but he was brilliant.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big Henderson fan, Phil. It was great to see him shining the other night. I think as well the important thing is that Liverpool fans would probably take great heart from is that their attacking three didn't have their best game. You know, as a three, they didn't play very well, and we know that they can be better. So if they can be better against a Bayern Munich team, who of course will be without Kimmich, and he's one of their best defenders, you know, I will be going, if I'm a Liverpool supporter going to Munich, I'd be going there with great hope, I think, after that.
Yeah.
Especially they didn't concede the away goal, so the advantage is very much on Liverpool's side. Now, the issue of whether they should be focusing on the Premier League or the Champions League has been talked about ad nauseum of late. Obviously, you have more emotional involvement when it comes to Liverpool. I get the impression, obviously, the Premier League is the one the fans really want, more for historical reasons. But there's
no guarantee. Like this, it's madness to think that anyone would suggest, you know, the Champions League doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, what happens if Liverpool had gone out and lost 2-0 to Bayern and that's them out of the Champions League? Then they go to Old Trafford, lose, and then start losing ground to Manchester City. Then they're left in that situation where they're out of the Champions League and they're not going to win the Premier League. So they can't afford... I know what people are saying, that if they put so much energy into a Champions League night, then their Premier League performances could suffer. But they definitely play with a bit more restraint this season. So maybe it is achievable to do... I don't think they're going to win both. To be honest, I don't think they'll win either. But it's a case of trying to stay in the title race and the Champions League for as long as you can.
Graeme Souness was saying when he was on the other night that you can only look to the next game. And I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it does hold true in this respect. Because I think if that starts creeping into the players' minds, then it starts kind of doing some damage. But in terms of the management, I think Klopp has managed the squad much better than he did last season. And you can make the argument that maybe Fabinho and Keita and Shaqiri, you know, haven't necessarily established them as first team players. Not that Shaqiri, for example, would have been bought for that. But they have offered a good amount of rotation, and I think actually they're not quite as in the red zone, no pun intended, than last season, so that's a bonus.
Yeah, we're going to go to the Europa League results very shortly, but before that, just a word on Barcelona, Steve-O. Weren't exactly impressive against Lyon, and their away record in the Champions League is not being very good at all.
Yeah, no, it's true. But again, look, Barcelona, look at the attacking talent they have. Look, Messi's there, Coutinho's seems to have found a place in the team now, along with Luis Suarez. So we all know how absolutely lethal those three players can be. The other key thing about Barcelona is they're not conceding many goals. They're a lot tougher to break down than they ever have been, I suppose, in the last 10 years. So, you know, Barcelona are kind of coming up there, not really much attention around them, a lot of people kind of writing them off. But as I said, the key thing when you come to the closing stage of these competitions, you've got to look at the teams who aren't conceding that many goals. And allied to that then, as I said, Barcelona's attacking threats are under no question whatsoever. If they can click in at the right time of the season, if they can peak at the right time of the season, I'm not writing them off. They're up there. They're in my power rankings anyway for this week. I'm keeping them in there.
Yeah, they're at number 5. And also Atletico Madrid are in there. Now, Brian Kerr was discussing them after their 2-0 win against Juventus on Virgin Media. So here's that clip.
They were rough. They were passionate. They were organised, aggressive, just as you expect them to be. But they also had a lot of skill in the attacking positions. Griezmann, I thought, played very well in patches in the match, but particularly so in the second half. And the combination with Costa was very effective until they took him off. Manager made 3 substitutions, clever substitutions in the second half. Got Morata on the pitch. Suddenly looks like he's got his confidence back after his time at Chelsea. He got Correa on the pitch, who had big influence in the game. And they just looked... They always looked to me like they were going to win it. What we saw in the highlights was one shot from Ronaldo early in the match, 8 minutes in, the keeper saved, and the late save from Bernardeschi, which was coming into the 90th minute. And that was really it from Juve. Plenty of the ball, but couldn't get through those 2 banks of 4. And, you know, we've seen it so often.
Yeah, we've come back.
So that's Brian Kerr on Virgin Media discussing the Atletico Madrid-Juventus game. Obviously, Atletico Madrid looking very, very impressive. They are the reigning Europa League champions, but there was Europa League action last night as well. We'll start with Chelsea, actually, because there's been a lot of noise about them in the Premier League, but they've seen off Malmo relatively comfortably, and now in the draw as well, they've got Dynamo Kiev.
Yeah, I suppose the question is, will Maurizio Sarri be in charge by the time that tie comes around?
Yeah, which is the subject of our debate, so we'll hold off on that temporarily.
Yeah, like he's picked pretty similar team. He hasn't made a lot of changes in the Premier League, and he's been criticised for that. And obviously the whole debate about where you play N'Golo Kanté, and Jorginho is his man, but they look a bit leggy at times. But he does make changes then in the Europa League, because this is a competition that Chelsea don't play in that often. You know, the Premier League sides are able to coast through the group. And now the draws are getting a little bit tougher. Malmo was a nice draw for them. Kiev will be a tougher one. The same applies to Arsenal, where they got Bate and they overturned the deficit. It's a tougher draw playing a team like Rennes. So it's kind of now at this stage, last 16 quarterfinals, that's maybe where we'll see just how seriously the Premier League teams are taking this competition.
Yeah, Barkley versus Kovacic. So this seems to be the either or that Sarri's going for. Where would you stand on who should be kind of leading the line there?
It's interesting because if you think about the respective players and where they came from, so you've got Kovacic on loan from Madrid and Barkley having come in from Everton, it's almost like this dichotomy of the kind of rich kid, poor kid. And in the respect that Barkley has shown, particularly at the start of the season, actually, he was grafting away. He'd improved significantly, I thought, as a player. And I think his sort of slight drop off in form has coincided with the teams, which is understandable enough. I think Kovacic has a high ceiling. He's obviously highly thought of, but perhaps actually sometimes when I've seen him, the work rate and that aspect isn't quite there. So it's that old one, you know, who do you back? Do you back the sort of more creative, the one with the higher ceiling, or the one who's got a little bit more about them? But I think, look, if Kovacic can kind of, you know, put his nose to the wheel for the rest of the season, then he'll be the one that I'd be picking. But for the moment, I mean, Barkley's looking...
That's the problem with Chelsea, that the fact that either of these lads are getting into the starting 11, they're not good enough. Like Ross Barkley is one of those players that at a younger age had all this potential, and it just hasn't really fulfilled it. And I watch him in games and he does some really, he's so athletic and he's powerful, but then he does some really sloppy things, like he, you know, a loose touch where you're thinking, no, you're technically, he's a very good player, so why loose touch? And, you know, that can lead to a rash challenge. Kovacic just seems to be, yeah, he's your kind of 6-7 out of 10, but doesn't do anything that spectacular. And if he was so good, why were Real Madrid willing to loan him out?
It's interesting as well, I guess, from an England perspective as well, Barkley isn't really even in the conversation as much as you would have thought at this age, where he's kind of coming towards his peak, that you kind of think, you know, especially England have a lot of good young players coming through, but midfield is still an area where they need a bit of work.
Yeah, I don't think he really offers anything that England need, frankly. I think he stagnated a great deal when he initially came through at Everton, and he was kind of seen almost as this number 10, full number 10. He never quite kicked on. I don't think he would be in the conversation with Southgate. There's, as you say, there's a good few young players coming through, like the young lad at Wolves, even Gibbs-White and Phil Foden and the like, that you're starting to get players, and unfortunately Declan Rice as well in this situation where there are starting to be, don't mention the war, but it's like it's, you know, it's a situation where there's a little bit more numbers than right before.
Yeah, very quick
cheek. He seems to be forgotten. Like, he could play in that role as well.
He could, but I don't think Sarri ever really trusted him fully. He got a few games kind of the first half of the season, but it seems to have dissipated now, which is unfortunate for him. A quick word on Celtic. Obviously, they were the subject of the debate last week, where I think we were trying to decide, would Celtic remain a European force at some point into the future? Obviously, I think both sides of the argument kind of came down on the side that no, that's not going to happen. Obviously, they lost 3-0 on aggregate against Valencia. What more can we say? And particularly, I suppose, the question of the defensive side as well. Brendan Rodgers doesn't seem to have nailed that down, which actually is a problem that persisted pre-Celtic.
Yeah, it's something that when he was at Liverpool, they made the same mistakes all the time. And, you know, he can say that if you're playing a possession-based game, and you hold on to the ball a lot longer, like he does when they're playing Scottish Premiership football, that, you know, you can get away with it. But at the higher level, that's where Celtic get caught out. They concede a lot of sloppy goals. You know, they're always going to be a tricky opponent when they play at home, just the support, the atmosphere at Celtic Park. But I don't think there's much else they can do. You know, they're going to win another domestic title, league title this season. And how do they get to the next level where they're competitive? Like, obviously they want to be in the Champions League, so that didn't work out. But the fact that they got to the knockout stage of the Europa League was seen as a major plus, and I suppose they could say that it was just a little bit of an unfortunate draw.
Yeah.
The business model isn't about growing as a club. It's kind of staying at a certain level, buy young players in, sell them off. And you can't really grow properly when you're operating like that.
Yeah. And look, I mean, they're just at a certain level within European competition where this is probably likely there or thereabouts their ability. Like, if you look at Valencia, if you look at that objectively, you're like, yeah, Valencia will go through. That's fine. I mean, the defending in the first leg particularly was shockingly bad, and I don't know whether it's a little bit of the element of the Boyata situation from earlier in the season kind of still hovering over them. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't especially impressed by them over the last couple of legs. And I think actually, in fairness, one of the things that could really do well for them is a resurgent Rangers. Yeah. And get that competition back within the domestic league, because you see with Bayern Munich and the like over the Guardiola years, for example, it makes it difficult to compete in European competition.
Once you reach a certain stage, yeah, you need a certain level of competition domestically. Arsenal obviously still competing, trying to get into the top four in the Premier League, but they did overcome Bata in the end, and they've got Rennes in the next round. Now, you've had a good chance of studying.
Yeah, I was covering the both legs of the Real Betis and Rennes tie, which was absolutely incredible. 3-3 last week in France, and you kind of thought that was it, that Betis had the 3 away goals and they were the better team. And then Rennes did exactly what they did last week, last night. They scored twice inside the first half an hour. But then Giovanni Lo Celso scores for Betis just before half time. And you think, right, second half is set up. Surely Betis can see this through. They just need one goal. Mm. Never came. And Niang, who obviously played in the Premier League at Watford, so much talent, but seems to move from club to club. And there's a few players that we'd recognise. Obviously, Ben Arfa still pulls the strings. He set up that goal that sealed the win. I was very impressed that they have a right back, Hamari Traore, who actually in the last few minutes when they're defending, he's bombing up the right wing. And I just thought, what are you doing? Mm. But he's explosive and he can defend. And obviously, he's very good going forward. So he's certainly one to watch. And Sarr, who would have played in the World Cup at Senegal, he has serious pace, can be a bit sloppy at times. So there's enough in the Rennes team to give Arsenal a few problems. They're quite solid as well.
So, like, Arsenal didn't really make it into anybody's power rankings last week. Are they a realistic contender for this tournament, or where should they be kind of waiting? Like the question with Liverpool, I guess, where should they be waiting a lot of their efforts? Should it be in Europe, or should it be kind of trying to get into the top four in their case?
I just think defence, frankly, objectively enough, I don't think they're going to make it into Europe either, into the Champions League either way. No. But like, just defensively, they're all over the shop, and that needs to come through significant signings in the summer. I think, look, people kind of make this dichotomy of, is it the league or is it the Europa League? I think you just have to take each game and just go for it. And because basically it's just barring kind of catastrophic injury or, you know, the likes of which Liverpool got kind of back end of last season with Oxlade-Chamberlain or whatever. But it does actually burnish the reputation of the side if you're starting to get a few wins in the Europa League as well. So I would say you just have to go for it.
Yeah, now we're going to be returning to Chelsea now for the debate. It's all about Maurizio Sarri. Is he coming towards the end of the line? It is Phil versus Kieran. You both have 60 seconds now. Kieran, we're going to let you go first now. So you've 60 seconds. And I think in your case, you think he should be kept on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think Maurizio Sarri went into an extremely dysfunctional club in Chelsea last summer. You have an owner who is literally in exile, who has called the manager once. Michael Emanalo and Marina Granovskaya have overseen a situation with regard to transfers where they have wasted hundreds of millions of pounds. You've got the likes of Morata for 65 million, Drinkwater for 35 million, 35 million on Batshuayi, barely featured within the first team. Moreover, I think that there is a situation within that squad that the mentality is not quite right. I don't think Hazard's head is right. And I think, given the turnover that's actually happened over there over the last few years, they need to kind of go with Sarri for the next few games. And he's shown with Napoli at least that he can kind of work under restrictions, i.e. when Higuain left and Dries Mertens came in too. So.
You've done well. You've 7 seconds left.
Oh, there we go. Well, yeah.
Major arguments.
It's not too late to save Terry.
No. All right, Phil, so you've got the opposite end of this scale. Your time starts now.
Okay, well, I think we could see Sarri maybe depart Chelsea after Sunday's League Cup final against Manchester City. If the league game is anything to go by, City are going to win this comfortably. Now, the only thing, maybe some of the Chelsea players, a bit of pride, they know it's a cup final, they want to deliver. The news today that they've got a transfer ban, I just think it's an absolute mess. He didn't have a pre-season. You know, you have to. He's pointed out in the last few weeks that the managers ahead of him in the league, apart from Solskjaer, obviously, have all had time. The problem is that Chelsea don't give you time. He's come in, and one of the first things he did was he took their best player, one of their best players, and moved him up. He's brought in Jorginho, his man. That hasn't worked out, and he is very stubborn. He got time at Napoli to change things, but Chelsea fans. Chelsea, the club, are used to winning league titles. Sarri hasn't won anything, and I think that he just is saying all the wrong things. He's going to be sacked, but do you know what? I don't think he's going to care too much.
I hear Stuart's Inquiry then.
Yeah, Stuart's Inquiry, you may have slightly overrun. Very, very slightly.
Where was my warning?
Well, look, you were in mid-flow.
Second warning, like, you know, the end of the round.
I cannot stop in mid-flow. You were very passionate.
I took 7 seconds off him.
I don't think that's how debates generally work. I will adjudicate in my case, and anyway, and it actually falls down to the news that happened today about the transfer ban. I think it's better to keep them because, you know, they're in a state of flux already. So, you know, why add more? You know, bring in a manager who then potentially might not be able to bring in his own players and is having to deal with, you know, Jorginho being brought in, Kante, etc. So for me,
I don't think it was objective to begin with, to be honest.
No,
this whole thing's a farce.
I just think Chelsea fans are on his back already. They're sick of watching this Sarri ball stuff. Yeah. And you know, Napoli were brilliant to watch. I'm not saying Sarri's not a good manager, but I just think Chelsea is the wrong club.
It's also the speed that public opinion changes. I mean, it was only until, you know, he beat City in what, November or something like that, where he was the flavour of the month. And just
interesting though, they didn't play the way Sarri wanted them to play in that game.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, we're going to just look at the Europa League draw before we get to the power rankings. So, a few interesting games here. Valencia versus Krasnodar, Eintracht versus Inter. Eintracht is actually a club that Steve-O, who unfortunately had to depart a few minutes ago, he has pointed out as a potential dark horse in this competition. There are a few interesting players, including Jovic. Sevilla versus Prague, then Napoli versus Salzburg, Chelsea versus Dynamo Kiev, Arsenal versus Rennes. Phil, of course, you've just discussed them in depth as well. Quite a dangerous team, potentially. Zenit versus Villarreal, and Dynamo Zagreb versus Benfica. So a few interesting ones. Mm. Which one jumps out to you there in terms of fixtures?
Arsenal-Rennes will be very interesting, I think. Arsenal are just one of those teams that you can turn in fantastic performances. Like, even away from home, they can do real damage. And Rennes the other night with Betis were really interesting. But what about you, Phil?
Yeah, no, that I am looking forward to that one because I didn't give Rennes much of a chance going in last night and they surprised me. They've never been in the knockout stage of the competition. When they play at home, they'll have a really great atmosphere and, you know, the fans are really buying into what's going on at the club at the moment. So I just wonder, can they cause a shock there? Possibly. Sevilla have a nice draw there against Slavia Prague. Sevilla, I've covered a couple of their games as well this season, and Ben Yedder always impresses me. Just seems to have a knack for scoring goals, and Benega is there. Kind of changes. Sometimes he goes three at the back. Mm. Sometimes they go 4-3-3. Quincy Promes is there as well. Mm. There's, you know, I mean, they won three in a row. Unai Emery was there. They have great pedigree in the competition. And then Eintracht and Inter Milan is one that catches the eye as well. Icardi,
yeah.
Like, what's going to happen between now and the end of the season with Icardi?
He's probably gone.
Yeah.
Obviously in the summer, but he seems to have been frozen out already, yeah, which is quite interesting.
Actually, they've been doing all right without him.
Yeah. Won the last four.
Yeah, and they saw off Rapid Vienna as well without him, but then again, they had won the first leg. We're going to go to the power rankings now, actually. We'll get to the Europa League one. Sevilla does does feature at the very, very top of mind. But for the Champions League, at least, Manchester City are currently top of mind, and then Real Madrid, and below that then Liverpool, and then a couple of other teams as well. So once we get that up on the screen, but I'm not sure about Manchester City now, and I can actually make an argument against pretty much all the teams I've picked.
That's
in
it.
There.
It's a hard, yeah. It is hard to pick a winner because...
Yeah, there's mine again. Atletico Madrid and Barcelona to finish it off as well. And yeah. I could make an argument against for and against all of these teams.
Yeah, and Atletico Madrid, because of what they did to Juventus.
Yeah.
But then Atletico Madrid in the last few seasons, you think, right, this is the year they're going to do it. Like, I mean, they were seconds away from winning it in 2014. But they... they just always seem to come unstuck, and that's why it's so hard to pick. And Real Madrid, I was thinking, right, Real Madrid, not only are they at the business end, this is when they really start to peak, then they started getting into the title race in Spain, but lost last weekend. Yeah. So that means they're pretty much out of the La Liga running. So then they go back to what they usually do, and it's all on the Champions League. And... who would have thought that a few months ago?
Yeah. I think I know it's a truism, but the draw will tell us a lot. I really think that this could be Atletico's year for the sole reason that a lot of the other teams have their eyes on other prizes as well. Real Madrid tend to start peaking around February, March, regardless of how they're doing. But I just think that with the goals that they've lost with Ronaldo, and I'm not entirely convinced by what Solari is doing there at the moment, that they're going to fall a touch short. So it could also be Liverpool. I really could see that happening, because I actually think that they'll see the second leg of the Bayern as a bit of a free hit. If they go out, whatever, like you can focus on the league, but it could go anyway.
It depends on the draw as well, because that completely changes every power ranking, every kind of narrative here as well.
We haven't mentioned Tottenham.
No, they're a dangerous team as well, and obviously they're pretty much odds on now to get to the quarterfinal. Yeah. They did the business in the first leg against Dortmund. I'm still not sure what to expect from them, and that's the thing. And maybe even the likes of Harry Kane coming back could actually knock them off kilter in a way. So it's hard to predict.
That would silence the, what has he won?
That's one way to silence it. Nathan and Steve-O also had power rankings as well.
Let's eviscerate these then.
Yeah, so these ones, that's Nathan's ones there now. I think there's a slight change, obviously, from last week, Real Madrid falling and Liverpool falling, and Atletico Madrid, after their result against Juventus, climbing up. And we'll look at Steve-O's now as well. Wow. He's kind of like
there we go, Steve. Man after my own heart. Beautiful stuff.
Now, he's not here to argue his case, but Man City have fallen and the rest have kind of moved up.
Interesting to say PSG there.
Yeah, I'm
Paris. Paris FC is there now.
Because I've completely left them out of my one. I'm not sure about them. Like, obviously, they're a quarter-final team, but I can't really...
Yeah, do you know what's going to happen? Neymar is going to come back and ruin
it
for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Completely. It's written in the stars.
Yeah, he's going to just roll around on the ground and it'll just turn the game... into a game that they probably could win, but they won't. Yeah. And I still think, watching the World Cup last summer, that Brazil could have won it if he wasn't there. Mm.
Probably, yeah. I mean, look, his rolling around kind of took away, I think, from basically their own game plan, and that's unfortunate for Brazil. But look, we got a deserving winner in France. Now, for the Europa League as well, I have my power rankings, and for a year was my hometown of Sevilla at the very, very top, then followed by Napoli. I just feel they're that far behind in Serie A, but still far ahead of third and fourth that they can actually concentrate slightly on this tournament. Chelsea, as much as they have issues, I still think they have enough in this competition.
Yeah, Trossard will be gone in a few weeks, so you would like... whoever's in.
You love Steve Holland.
Steve Holland apparently is the man who's going to be taking charge there.
See, and the Chelsea squad have shown that when a manager goes, that there's no better squad that can unite and start getting a few results.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it'll be interesting. No, like Sevilla are a tricky one because they started the season so well and have sort of fallen off a little bit. Benfica are one that would be interesting to me because
they operate under a European curse as well. They haven't won a European trophy since 1962, and it's kind of been like a Mayo-like narrative. They're the Mayo of European football in that, yes, they had their success in the 50s, 60s, and then can't seem to win it again. So I have them fourth, but obviously curses are things that you have to believe in, so I'm just leaving them fourth. They're not going to be number one.
Fair enough. Napoli, I think you're right, though. Yeah. I think that's they're kind of well set there to actually make a proper run at this.
And could easily have got out of their Champions League group as well. I mean, they were in with Liverpool and PSG, yeah. And they got to count themselves.
The two games against PSG are the ones that did the damage for Napoli.
Yeah.
Like, they could have won both those games.
Yeah, I've put Inter at number five as well. Just, they may be safe enough as the tournament goes on within Serie A to be able to concentrate on this tournament as well. So we'll see how that goes. Obviously, we are going to be back in the next Champions League and Europa League week. And a segment we're going to be bringing in is your favourite European moment. So please tweet it in, send it to us on Facebook or wherever you tune in. But that's it for this week. Phil Egan, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having
Kieran us. Bradley. I'm Raf Giallo, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
This could be the most dramatic story of the season. It's Torres to give Chelsea a place in the Champions League final. The headline has been written.
Unbelievable! Unbelievable!
Into Sheringham!
The box waiting for the cross, and it was Bale! Oh, the ball!